Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Tuesday, October 1st. Today we're joined by Eric and Kate to discuss a hot topic. Let's dive right in, shall we? Today, we're discussing a landmark report on alcohol's role in new cancer cases. Let's start with the basics. Eric, what types of cancer are linked to alcohol consumption?
Well, Ted, it's quite a sobering list, if you'll pardon the pun. The report identifies six types of cancer that are linked to knocking back a few: head and neck cancers, esophageal cancer, liver cancer, breast cancer, colorectal cancer, and stomach cancer. It's quite a range, isn't it? I mean, who would have thought that your favorite happy hour drink could be causing such a party in your body, and not the fun kind?
Hold your horses, Eric. While it's true that these cancers are linked to alcohol, we need to be careful about how we present this information.
I understand your concern, Kate, but we can't sugarcoat the facts. The numbers speak for themselves. Over 1 in 20 cancer diagnoses in the West were attributed to alcohol in 2019. That's not just a drop in the
bucket. Sure, but let's not lose sight of the bigger picture here. We can't ignore that 80% of cancer cases aren't linked to alcohol. Let's not create unnecessary panic. People have
I'm not trying to cause panic, Kate. I'm simply presenting the facts as they are. Don't you think people deserve to know the risks associated with their choices? This isn't about fear-mongering.
Interesting points from both of you. Now, the report mentions modifiable risk factors. Kate, could you explain what that means?
Gladly, Ted. Modifiable risk factors are basically things we can change in our lifestyle. You know, like choosing to take the stairs instead of the elevator, or swapping that midnight snack for a carrot. The report suggests 40% of all cancer cases are associated with these factors, with alcohol being a major player in this boozy game of risk. But let's not forget, it's just one piece of a very complicated puzzle.
That's a crucial point, Kate. It means we have control over a significant portion of our cancer risk. Shouldn't we be doing more to reduce alcohol consumption then? I mean, if we know that nearly half of all cancer cases could potentially be prevented by lifestyle changes, isn't that something we should be shouting from the rooftops?
Hold your horses, Eric. While it's true we can modify these factors, we shouldn't oversimplify. People drink for various reasons, including social and cultural ones. It's not just about health, it's about tradition, celebration, relaxation. We can't just expect people to give up their Friday night pints because of some statistics.
I'm not suggesting prohibition, Kate, but shouldn't we at least be more aware of the risks? The report shows a 1.9% annual increase in early onset colorectal cancer among adults under 50 between 2011 and 2019. That's young people we're talking about here. Don't they deserve to know what they're potentially doing to their bodies?
Yes, but correlation doesn't equal causation, Eric. Other factors could be at play here. Maybe it's our diets or stress levels, or the fact that we're all glued to our phones 24/7. We can't just point the finger at alcohol and call it a day.
Fair point, but shouldn't we err on the side of caution when it comes to our health? If there's even a chance that reducing alcohol consumption could prevent cancer, isn't that worth considering? We're not talking about giving up joy here, we're talking about potentially saving lives.
Let's look at this from a historical perspective. Eric, can you think of a similar situation where a common substance was later found to have significant health risks?
Absolutely, Ted. The most obvious parallel is tobacco. For decades, smoking was considered harmless or even beneficial. Can you believe it? Doctors even recommended certain cigarette brands in advertisements. It's like looking back at a bizarre alternate reality, but it just goes to show how perceptions can change when new information comes to light.
That's an extreme comparison, Eric. Alcohol has been a part of human culture for thousands of years. It's not some newfangled product that we suddenly discovered was harmful. People have been enjoying wine with their meals since ancient times.
So was tobacco in many cultures, Kate. But let's look at the facts. In the 1950s and 60s, multiple studies began linking smoking to lung cancer. By 1964, the U.S. Surgeon General declared smoking caused lung cancer. It took time, but the evidence became undeniable. Are we going to wait that long with alcohol?
But the situation with alcohol is different. We're talking about increased risk, not direct causation like with smoking.
True, but the tobacco industry also argued about increased risk for years. They even had their own research claiming smoking was safe. Sound familiar? We can't afford to repeat
the same. Interesting comparison. Kate, how would you say the alcohol situation differs from the tobacco revelations?
Well, for one, moderate alcohol consumption has been linked to some health benefits, like reduced risk of heart disease. We never saw that with tobacco. It's not black and white. A glass of red wine with dinner isn't the same as chain-smoking a pack of cigarettes.
But recent studies have questioned those benefits, Kate. The risks might outweigh any potential benefits. It's like finding out that the superfood you've been eating isn't so super after all. We need to be open to new information and willing to change our habits accordingly.
That may be, but we're not seeing the same level of direct harm as we did with tobacco. Secondhand smoke, for instance, has no parallel with alcohol. You're not hurting others by having a beer at a barbecue.
Fair point, but shouldn't we be more proactive this time? It took decades to change public perception about tobacco. Can we afford to wait that long with alcohol? We have the opportunity to get ahead of this issue and potentially save lives.
I agree we need more public awareness, but we shouldn't rush to demonize a substance that's deeply ingrained in our culture. It's about finding a balance between informing people and allowing them to make their own choices.
Let's look to the future. Eric, how do you see this information changing alcohol consumption patterns?
I believe we'll see a gradual shift towards lower consumption, especially among younger generations. They're typically more health conscious and might be more receptive to this information. We might see a rise in alcohol-free alternatives or lower alcohol content drinks. It's not about giving up fun. It's about being smarter about our choices.
I disagree. I think we'll see more emphasis on responsible drinking rather than abstinence. People won't give up alcohol entirely, but they might be more mindful of how much they consume. It's like how we approach fast food now. We know it's not great for us, but we don't ban it outright.
But is responsible drinking enough when we're talking about cancer risk? Even light to moderate drinking has been linked to increased risk for some cancers, particularly breast cancer. It's not just about drinking less. It's about understanding that any amount carries a risk.
You can't expect people to completely change their lifestyles based on a single risk factor, Eric.
But isn't our health worth making some changes? We're not talking about giving up all life's pleasures. We're talking about being informed.
Interesting perspectives. Now, how do you think this might affect public health policies?
I predict we'll see stricter regulations on alcohol advertising and sales, similar to what happened with tobacco, maybe even warning labels on alcohol products. It's not about prohibition. It's about giving people the information they need to make informed choices. We might see limits on alcohol sponsorship in sports or entertainment, for example.
That's an overreaction. I think we'll see more emphasis on education and awareness campaigns rather than heavy-handed regulation. People don't respond well to being told what to do. It's better to give them the facts and trust them to make their own decisions. Maybe we'll see more funding for alcohol-related health research.
But hasn't that approach failed so far? The report mentions that in the U.S., around half of people don't know alcohol increases cancer risk. Clearly, current education efforts aren't enough. We need to do more than just put out a few PSAs and hope for the best.
Education takes time, Eric. We can't expect overnight changes. Plus, heavy regulation could lead to unintended consequences like a rise in illegal alcohol production. Remember what happened during Prohibition? We don't want to repeat those mistakes.
I'm not suggesting prohibition, Kate, but shouldn't we treat alcohol more like the health risk it is rather than a harmless social lubricant? We put warning labels on cigarettes, why not on alcohol? It's about giving people the information they need to make informed choices.
We should increase awareness, yes, but without creating a moral panic. Alcohol, unlike tobacco, can be consumed in moderation with minimal risk for most people. It's about finding a balance between public health and personal freedom.
Well, folks, it looks like we've stirred up quite a debate here. Clearly, this is a complex issue with no easy answers. As we wrap up, I want to thank Eric and Kate for their insightful comments. Remember, folks, stay informed and drink responsibly. Until next time, this is Ted signing off from Listen 2.